Welcome to Detoxicity, by men, about men, for everyone. This is a podcast that's attempting to remix the narrative around masculinity, and I thank you for listening and supporting. If you're new to the podcast, I hope you check out the archive, which contains over 150 episodes. I'm always happy when someone reaches out with a friendly word or constructive criticism, so never hesitate to hit me up either via IG at DetoxPodGuy or via email, detoxpod@gmail.com. You can also contact me if you're interested in being a guest on the show or if you know someone who might be a good guest for the show. There's also a Detoxicity Patreon. Patrons get episodes 1 week early, plus I will mail you a cool DetoxPod fridge magnet. Go to bit.ly/DetoxPodPlus to find out more. Oh, one more thing. Late last year, I completed my certification courses and I am now a life and relationship coach. I'm taking clients. Go to mike-joseph.com and book a free consultation. Thanks for listening. I really do appreciate you. Hey, everybody. My guest for this episode is Tariq Carroll. Tariq is a photographer and a musician. He records under the name Amir, has a new project which may be out by the time this goes live. I met Tariq a couple of years ago as a co-host with my friend Yanni Blue, who has been on this show a couple of times, of a podcast called Bigger Than Our Dreams, Bigger with Two Eyes, which was really centered around two plus-size men of color working their way through the entertainment industry. And we do touch on that over the course of our conversation. Body image issues, breaking through in an industry that is very sort of focused on slimmer bodies, not necessarily bodies of color either. So we touch on all that. We relive the nightmare that was 2020. We talk about the coming out process and bisexuality and how Tariq navigates all of that. This episode is really about self-love and finding yourself and taking care of yourself and loving yourself. So I hope that you enjoy listening to this episode as much as I enjoyed making it. Tariq is a great conversationalist. Shout out because he's a Brooklynite just like me. So everybody listening, give it up for Tariq Carroll, a.k.a. Amir.
What's up, everybody? My name is Tariq Amir Carroll. I'm going to put the Amir in there because I do music too under my name Amir. I'm a Brooklyn-based creative. I am a photographer. I am a musician. I'm a little bit of a fat liberation activist mixed in there.
We can talk about all of that. So where in Brooklyn did you grow up?
In Clinton Hill, Fort Greene.
Okay.
Yes.
Now, were you in Clinton Hill, Fort Greene when it was rowdy, or were you in Clinton Hill, Fort Greene?
Okay. Oh, yeah, back when there were crack pipes on Fulton Street. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I was here for all of the changes, all of the gentrification. I've really been able to see this neighborhood through multiple transformations, really. Yeah.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, I went to Brooklyn Tech, so...
Oh, my cousin went to Brooklyn Tech.
So very familiar with Fort Greene, Clinton Hill, you know, in the 80s and early 90s. So much different than it is now.
Went to Brooklyn Tech, so you definitely know. Because that park right across the street, Fort Greene Park, my elementary school is two blocks heading towards Bed-Stuy in that direction. So it's like literally right there, you know, and I have like two of my cousins, they went to Brooklyn Tech. So like, you've seen all of the changes.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. 100%. You know, it's so weird, you know, just on some Brooklyn shit, it's so weird just to like walk around Brooklyn now. And even like where Barclays is at now, like me and my family keep joking with each other. And we're like, we don't remember what was there before.
You know what? I do vaguely remember what was there. And it was literally, it was a lot, just like an open kind of lot where you could kind of see the trains there. And then now what I don't remember, what was there before they put the Atlantic Mall. That I don't recollect whatsoever. I remember them building it, but I don't remember what was there beforehand.
I don't totally. I remember that McDonald's on the corner, like right by the DeKalb station. That McDonald's has been there for at least 40 years.
Yeah.
Because when I was in school, that's where we would go after school and hang out.
Yep.
But everything else in that area, like I grew up with my grandmother and she was a foster parent. And there used to be like a, I don't remember the name of it now, but there was like a center where my grandmother would bring the foster kids and have them spend time with their, you know, with their blood family. Mm-hmm. So there's one of those places there, but everything else, I don't remember what was there.
It's so different. It feels like I still even look at my neighborhood where I'm at now, and I walk down the block and I'm just like, damn. And it was so funny. The other day I went to my supermarket right over here. And this supermarket has been through multiple changes. Like, they took it down, bought it back, but then built high rises on top of it. And there was this one lady who worked at the old supermarket and working at the new one. And we kind of just locked eyes and just talked about the changes in the neighborhood, you know? And yeah, it's been a lot.
It's crazy to think about just over the years. What was your initial inspiration to become a creative? Because you do so many different things, from photography to art to music.
Wow, that's a good question. I've always been a creative kid. And I don't know if I could say if it was in my blood. You know, my mom's always been creative. She's a teacher. And then my dad, he lived most of his life being a train operator and a basketball coach, but he used to be a photographer as well. So, but in growing up, my mom was always a creative one. I think she kind of saw it in me and kind of nurtured it and let me do my thing. And I always had like a camera. I used to have this purple Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle film camera.
That's funny.
Yeah, so I still have the pictures from that camera, because the film would have like a little Ninja Turtle stamp in the corner. So I still have the images I shot from that. And then I don't know, like, being creative art was something that always spoke to me even as a kid. I was a fucking space cadet in school. I was not paying attention to any of that shit going on. I was always in my own world. And then as I got older, I really, really loved music, not really think I wanted to make it or any of that. And then once I got into high school, boy, another camera, it was just still shooting. And then it wasn't until I got halfway through college, because I went to college for graphic design, but I didn't really know what the fuck I wanted to do. Who knows? What the fuck?
Nobody knows what they want to do at 18, 19 years old.
And for me, I was 17 when I graduated high school. So you putting this pressure on a teenager, like, we need to pick something. And I'm like, okay, well, let's try graphic design, you know, and just blindly choosing it. But I knew I just wanted to be somewhere in the arts, because in my household, either you went to college or you went to work, because my mom had her master's in above that, so she was not playing, and I didn't want to go to work. So college it was. And then in doing that, I had another camera in my hand, and then I had to take a required photography course of graphic design, and I think that kind of just unlocked everything. And then just growing up in New York, working with musicians, shooting musicians, being behind the scenes, shooting B-roll. I used to intern at UMG for Eric Wong. So I did that for a minute, and I was shooting, you know, Diana Gordon, and that was a lot of fun. So all of that kind of played a role into me being this hybrid creative of a musician and a photographer, because music has always been in my life. And photography has always been my life. And I always just had this knack for wanting to create imagery and sonics, pretty much.
Do you feel like there's a different part of Tariq that does photography and there's a different part of Tariq that does music? Or do you think they mix together?
So, yes and no. I like to keep them separate. You know, Tariq is the photographer. He has the background. He's done all this awesome stuff, you know, like GQ, all of that. Then Amir, like, for me, music, it's, even though it's been around, it's a newer medium for me. So it feels more fresh. I'm a little bit more inspired and intrigued and in that space. So in ways, being Amir has given me an opportunity to escape from being Tariq at times when being Tariq got a little too intense. So they both are outlets that really have poured into me a lot. It's been a huge part of my healing. But I will say, in certain ways, they do come together, because, you know, me and Yanni dropped our album last year, Dream Big, and I did the creative direction for that project and editing the images, you know, concepting all that stuff. So Tariq is always in the background, even when he's being a mirror. So that is where they do come together. And I think even now in being a musician, when I work with other musicians, I now understand the back end more of what they need. So they do work hand in hand, yes. Mm-hmm. But the business end of it, yes. But the creative side, I like to keep them separate.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
It makes sense that you and Yanni would, that you would do the artwork for that. Because I'm like, you do this. You're not going to hire somebody else to like control your art. Like that doesn't make no sense.
Yeah.
You mentioned art being a place where you could heal. Have you always been conscious of that? Or were you doing it and then you realized that this was kind of getting you through some stuff?
I became conscious of it when I dealt with like my first bout of depression in my last year of college. And I didn't realize what it was I was dealing with. I mean, who does? You know what right. I mean? But I had really bad anxiety. And then, you know, that triggered other things. And I think for me at that time, I needed something to escape. I was 21. I just came out, was just coming to terms with, you know, my sexuality. And I'm grateful that my mom was pretty accepting and chill about it. But just in coming into myself and, I mean, 2021, it's a weird, scary time. You know what I mean? You're figuring out a lot of shit.
Mm-hmm.
And at, even at that point, I didn't want to do graphic design anymore. I wanted to drop out of college and go and do photography, but I could not do that. So I had decided to take 18 credits each semester so I could get out in time, which was a lot. So just the pressure of that really triggered a lot of my anxiety and other things. And I had a really, really hard time my last semester of college, but photography was escape. There was no expectations. I wasn't being graded for it. I could just create purely from the space of just creating. And for me, graphic design always kind of felt a bit restrictive of what I could do because I wasn't the best at like drawing and shit like that. So with photography and like being a kid that grew up watching all that wacky ass America's Next Top Model and shit, you know, I really was able to create my own world and do set design. It was a really great, not necessarily a distraction, but it gave me something to feel good about that I was creating, that was taking my mind away from the other shit I was dealing with. And then being able to pull that into my work and communicate with what I was dealing with through exploring themes and stuff. So I think at that point, I realized how healing art could be.
It really is. I had a guest on recently, and they are very big on having art or having some kind of creative pursuit to complete you as a person almost. Yeah. Like his whole theory, or not his whole theory, but good part of his theory was based around, like, you can go to therapy all you want, you can learn how to cope, you can do all the things, but unless you have something to do.
Woo! That is so real.
Yeah.
That is so real, because I've done therapy. Right. And therapy is great. I would love to go back. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But outside of that, you do need to have other coping mechanisms, other tools. That for me, it's always been art. That's even how I got into music back in 2019. Again, I was dealing with some anxiety. You know, my dad, I got really sick. He almost died. So that was a lot to deal with. And then I was dealing with some relationship stuff that was kind of crazy. And then I was not working. Work was really dried up. So all of those things kind of impacted me at once. And I needed to do something to get my mind off of where my life was at that moment, because I knew, like, this is temporary right now. Things are going to change. You're going to get back to work. Things are going to come into place. Right now, you need to just get through this and find something to pour into that is going to pour back into you. Mm. And then I started playing around with GarageBand and playing around with chopping up samples and building drum patterns. And that became another thing, you know. And then COVID happened. That was talking about 2019.
Yep.
COVID happened.
Yes, it sure did.
COVID in Brooklyn, you know what I mean? Which was really scary, you know. And I remember being at home making beats long distance with one of my homies in California. And I remember just being on Zoom with him, and we're just hearing ambulances going by every like 20 minutes. When mm-hmm. like the level of anxiety that I had, a lot of us had during COVID.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, and the crazy part is we're still unpacking the impacts of COVID.
We really are. We haven't had the opportunity to stop and reflect on the 3 years where shit was crazy. I had almost taken it out of my mind for a little bit. But when you talked about the sirens, that brought me right back. Just sitting here on this couch and hearing siren after siren after siren.
Siren, and then you start to wonder how many of these people made it. How many of these people are okay? And just seeing the numbers of people dying, like it was just, it was really crazy. And then it kind of took me back to the feeling of 9/11, but five times worse, because at least with 9/11, you could still go outside. This was just a whole nother level of just uncertainty. Like, are we going to go back to normal? Are things going to ever get back to normal? And the only thing I had at that point, I couldn't be on set. I couldn't do shoots. So I was stuck in this room making music. So, and it was a really amazing outlet. Last year, I had a wild year last year from dealing with a really close friendship going up in flames, feeling betrayed, to dealing with a health scare with my mom, to work being weird again, you know, with the writer's strike. So I started writing another project alongside of Dream Big that really allowed me to get a lot of that out. Like, that project was really a safe space for me to navigate everything else that was going on. So for me, art has always been a place of refuge, a place of healing. And I've learned a lot about myself through being an artist. I've learned a lot about myself that I don't think I would have ever learned, or maybe have taken me longer to come to realization of if I wasn't doing this.
Yeah, I mean, art at its best, right? Like, art makes you reflect.
Mm-hmm.
So whether you're drawing or writing or singing or whatever, it's an outlet. Like, it's a way that you can plug yourself in and get through the things that you're getting through. And that feeling, what you put out might not be a direct reflection of the way that you're feeling, but you can still put your feeling into it.
Exactly.
Yeah. I gotta ask about Fat Liberation Activist.
Let's get into it.
Let's talk about that.
Let's talk about it.
What does that mean, I guess?
So, okay. So, it's a newer term, and it's where I feel I check the boxes of in terms of where my ethics lie. And for me, if what I know of fat liberation, it really is, it's deeper than just equality as far as representation that we see in fashion as brands and all of that, the way that we see ourselves represented in media. It's beyond the inclusion of that, but it's even down to the political spaces of it as well. And even in terms of how fat people are judged, even in medical situations, you know, we have a lot of times where a doctor will look at you and automatically assume you have X, Y, and Z because of your weight and not treat other possible things.
Mm-hmm.
Even if we go into how the BMI index was created, you know what I mean? It was created by a white man who only surveyed other white men, you know what I mean? So it's not even a really accurate depiction of health. The fat liberation aspect of it, it's beyond representation, but it's the political aspect of it as well. It's more all-encompassing. It's more about equality, not just in media, but in all areas as well.
It brings my mind to a few different things. And, you know, just on a personal level, I used to be a significantly bigger person.
Mm-hmm.
So I've dealt, and I was never, like, I don't want to use bad terminology. I was never obese.
Right.
But I was, you know, walk down the street, they'd be like, yo, big man.
Right.
Yeah. So I had that. And then I lost a lot of weight due to illness.
Mm-hmm.
And I've kept it off, you know, all the time since. And the people that I tend to go for tend to be a little bit on the bigger side. Like, I don't have any fat phobia. But one thing that struck me as you were talking is the way that different cultures feel about being a bigger size.
Yes.
Because, you know, the way Black
and Latinx people feel is different than, and not even just white people, but like Southern white people.
Yeah, it's different. It's cultural. It's different parts of the world. You know what I mean? Like, if you're in Africa, if like you have weight on you, that's seen as like royalty. You know, I definitely in the South. You know, I just got back from Atlanta. There's definitely more of an appreciation for curvier and larger bodies. So a lot of it really stems from hegemony and hegemonic masculinity. You know what I mean? And people, a lot of us, we don't realize how much a lot of this shit, it is still tied back to whiteness. And that's the difference between body positivity and fat liberation. Body positivity is for yourself. It's for you to feel good about yourself. That's affirmation, self-care, that's pouring into you. That is taking care of your health. Because I think what a lot of people get misconstrued with body positivity and fat liberation, a lot of critique that I've gotten is, you're encouraging unhealthy lifestyles. Like, no, I'm trying to change what you see and what you perceive as healthy, because every fat person is not unhealthy.
And that's the thing. A lot of people think being overweight and being unhealthy are the same thing, and they're two different things.
Exactly. And that's been the point that I've been trying to drill in with the work that I've been doing with the Everyman Project over the last about six years now. And that is a difference, because for every man, we started at the beginning of these conversations. And now I feel there are deeper conversations that we need to have in terms of, again, how we get treated medically, you know, really getting into the layers of fat phobia. What is the root of it? Where does it come from? We're really asking those deeper questions than the surface questions that we've been having, the surface conversations we've been having lately, like, how does it feel to be fat? And we've had those conversations.
Right.
Now we need to get deeper into the infrastructure of how this really affects everybody.
And how have you personally been affected by it? I mean, what was it like growing up?
Well, growing up, always been the tallest kid in the class, number one. I've always been a little bit chunky on the heavier side. So growing up, yeah, I always felt different, you know, but also growing up in Brooklyn, it's a different thing because it kind of hardens you a bit. So for me, I already knew going into school, knowing the pecking order and how people would be treated. And I knew I had to be on it before someone would get on me. So right. I think I pivoted in a lot of ways being younger, with either being likable or being the funny guy or being the guy you ain't want to fuck with. And for me, I figured out the hybrid of all three. So
right.
Not that I was entirely exempt of like comments, but I can't necessarily say I've been all the way bullied, because I would make my allegiance with certain people in high school. I would become friends with all the girls that were bullies.
Right.
I would help them with their homework. And then when the boys would try to test me, it wasn't happening. But the fact that I had to even maneuver any of that as a kid, it's crazy. But yeah, I've always felt different. I think for me, I didn't really realize how I really felt about myself and my body and how people saw me. It was when I started dating. You know what I mean? That became, had its ups and downs with being fetishized sometimes, you know? So it's very layered. It has affected me in many ways, but definitely with, again, art being healing, right? With doing the Everyman Project, I really got to pull back the layers of how I felt about myself, you know? I'll tell a story. It's a little personal, but I'll tell it. Yeah. It was like maybe around 2016. I had met somebody, and this was the first time I ever engaged with someone else who was plus size as well. And I had an amazing experience. And it then changed my perception of how I saw myself, because I was like, wow, I had such an amazing time with this person. This person kind of looks like me. I've excluded this body type from my dating pool for so long. Why? If I excluded this body type out of my dating pool and this guy looks like me, then what do I think about myself? And that cracked the door for me to really unpack all the shit. Like, I've dealt with being body shamed by my own dad. You know what I mean? So it kind of cracked the door for me to really dig deep and dig out all of that shit, which that is a part of healing. You got to dig that shit up and look at it.
That's
and
right.
Sort it out and then really start to reframe your way of thinking. So in doing the Everyman Project, and I had my own anxiety even doing it, because I knew that I would be at the forefront of it. You know, and for the longest time, I would only let my art do the talking. But this time, with the project going viral and getting thrown an interview at Mike.com from Mike.com after a week of dropping it, and then NBC the next week, and then BuzzFeed the next week, and I'm still healing from my own shit. Like, I had just started doing the work, and then to have to be at the forefront and encourage everyone else to heal as I was healing. That was a lot. That was a lot, but it really helped me in sense of building community, because in having conversations and doing the castings that we did for the Everyman Project and being able to have these conversations with other men and seeing that we all dealt with the same shit, it made me feel a lot less alone. And it even brought me my own sense of confidence, because even the guys that would come into castings, they would show up, you know, mesh, lace, all kinds of shit that I didn't think I would even wear. So it, in a lot of ways, a lot of my models that I shot for Everyman, it inspired me to take my own risk with fashion and just owning it and just living to my fullest in my existence. So in many ways, doing the Everyman Project, it's helped me heal quite a bit.
I bet. Like, you brought up so many things. I really do think body shame is something that men in particular mm-hmm. need to reconcile themselves with. And it's not just the bigger dudes. Mm-hmm. I think it could be anything from your body type to your skin color to your height.
All of that.
Yeah.
I have friends who are shorter, you know what I mean? And like, they go through their own insecurities. And it's like, we don't often have these conversations. And that's how we've been programmed as men to not talk about our emotions and not talk about our feelings and not opening up and not being vulnerable. So much of that shit, it just stays in you. And
it's so toxic.
It's toxic.
Yeah. And was there a moment when you were like, okay, I'm working with these other people and they've hit like a place of comfort with their body, so I'm going to just, when did you rip the Band-Aid off?
I think as I had to do interviews in media, I had to rip it off, because it's like, I can't talk the talk and not walk the walk. So I think all of that just really just that push off the ledge and just, again, not feeling alone. And then also to just hearing everyone was dealing with the same shit. And I was like, yo, fuck it. Let's be out here. Let's own who we are. Let's be authentic. Let's stop hiding, you know? And I think I really feel that first year of the Everyman Project, and even if you look at how I dressed before then and even the year after, you're two different people. You know what right. I mean? So that year really was my own, I guess, internal awakening, so to speak. I'm really unpacking it now as I'm talking about it.
Right. You know, I love the Heavy D swag. You know what I'm saying? Like, I think a lot of big people, may you rest in peace, by the way, but also a lot of people, bigger people, and this was a situation when I was bigger too, don't feel like they can wear certain things because it makes them, they're worried about how, I was worried about how I would look.
Same. And for me, for the longest time, I was worried about how other people would perceive me, right. or how my parents would perceive me. And I got to a point where I was like, yo, you are grown. You are living your life for you. And it's like, once I started experimenting with wearing lace, playing with layers, mixing things that are a bit more feminine, masculine, and just having fun with fashion, and even me becoming comfortable in my own gender expression. Because like I mentioned, my dad was a basketball coach for the longest time. You know, I would get all the coolest shit like the Jordans, the track suits, and I still love that shit. I still love that shit. But now you might see me in track suit with nails. So it's like now I'm able to kind of bring both sides of myself together and really sit in it comfortably now. Even when I look at pictures of myself as a teen or in my early 20s, I just see myself really hiding. You know what I mean? And now it's completely different. Different right. energy now.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be either or. It can be yes also.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think that's important to understand that we all contain multitudes. And one day you might feel like wearing like a hoodie and some Tims. Or you can go out and you can rock your hoodie and your Tims, but also have nails.
And I do all of that.
Yeah.
I do all of that.
That's so dope. So switching gears a little bit, do you identify as gay or queer?
Queer.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. Yeah.
And what was that journey for you? We're going to have to do a whole nother podcast now.
Well, so when I first came out, I think the title I set with was bisexual because I've always been attracted to women, you know, and even in being bisexual, I got judged a lot by my friends because you have a lot of bisexuality erasure, bisexuality discrimination, and especially even in trying to date other women, it's really difficult. And for me to adjust from the judgment that I got even from my own parents a little bit, because they just see one or the other, you know what I mean? So then while I was younger, the title of bisexual, so maybe this doesn't fit me. And I was like, maybe I'll just do the no label things. I always hated labels. I've always hated them. But then as I did more research, again, in my early 20s, I felt the term queer felt the most all-encompassing for me. And it made the most sense. So I would say queer the fluid is kind of where I lay in the spectrum. But I don't care if people call me gay. I don't mind it. But if you really want to get to know me, I'll tell you. So, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, labels are a weird thing, right? Because you throw a label on yourself, it doesn't mean that that's who you're going to be a year from now or 5 years from now.
Exactly. Exactly. I wish when I was younger, I guess we all wish we had the confidence we had now. Because I got it really bad. Like, oh, you're bi. Why don't you just say you're gay? It's like, I don't have a problem, but I can't help it that I might see a bad bitch and feel something. You know what I mean? And that's reality. So it's like, if I had little to no attraction to women, then yeah, I would be comfortable. But I do feel there is some nuance in where and what I'm attracted to. And I do feel it is on a spectrum. You know what I mean? So like for me, queer and fluid is where I feel the most comfortable, honestly.
It's interesting, right? We've talked about bi erasure quite a bit on this podcast. Mm-hmm. And it sucks. Like, I don't really consider myself bi. I mean, I also prefer queer, but if you're a bi man, not necessarily a bi woman, if you're a bi man, straight guys think you're gay, straight girls think you're gay, and gay guys think you're gay. And I think there's some historical, I don't know what you want to call it. Speaking for myself, I side-eyed that for a long time because I would encounter a lot of men who would sleep with me and then be like, oh, it was an experiment. I'm going back to girls now. And I think that taints a lot of people.
It does, yeah.
And I also grew up during a time when there wasn't so much language about people being fluid. And also, if you were a guy who was into other guys, there was hysteria around HIV and AIDS and, you know...
Yeah.
Things are a bit different now, but still, I think a lot of bisexual guys kind of get it from all sides because it's like a lot of women even are like, well, I won't date you because you're also interested in men. And that's a shame.
It is a shame because at the end of the day, it comes down to the type of commitment that you have. If we're monogamous and that's the commitment, cheating is cheating. No matter if you cheat with a
man, guy or a girl or whatever.
It doesn't matter. Cheating is cheating. And I think, again, all of that still goes back to hegemonic masculinity. You know what I mean? How women see other men who engage sexually with other men. And it's like, that is something that needs to be seriously unpacked.
It really does need to be reevaluated.
Yeah, it does.
You know, you talked earlier about fetishization. Mm-hmm. And I feel like you have it coming and going because your size is likely a point of fetishization for a lot of people, and your skin color is a point of fetishization from a lot of people. So how do you deal with that?
I think I deal with it on multiple layers. Skin tone, yes. Body type, yes. But I even think visually because, you know, people may see me as androgynous because I have a higher voice, I have really soft features. So with specifically DL men, they see me in a different type of light. You understand what I'm saying.
Definitely understand what you're saying.
So it's fetishized on from multiple angles. It does make it really hard with dating. Even beyond that, even just on like engaging sexually with other people, it does make it more difficult. It does make things more nuanced, and it does make it harder to really trust people, honestly. So yeah, it definitely comes with its challenges, and I'm still learning how to navigate all of that shit. I can navigate it better now because I know what my standards are. I have a lot more confidence in myself and shit that I'm not going to tolerate. So,
right.
And that's something that I had to really build in my own self-worth and really doing that work. And unfortunately, a lot of people don't really do that work or really get to the level of self-awareness to realize that I deserve more than just being somebody's fucking fetish.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It does take an incredible amount of self-awareness, and it does, and you have to make some decisions that you might not necessarily want to make just for the sake of standing your ground. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
There's this book I read many years ago called Hung. And it's by Scott Polson Bryant, who is a queer black writer. And he's also a bigger dude. I haven't seen him in a long time. I think he's still a bigger dude. And he talks a lot in his book about fetishization. And it was the first time that that really wrapped itself around my head. And from the point that I read that, and, you know, I'm very open-minded. I don't have racial restrictions on the people that I date. But the second somebody hits me on an app or something like that, that is not black and says some shit about black dick or whatever, that's a swipe left.
No, absolutely not. Yeah.
Because they ain't fucking with you. They fucking with your skin color.
That is real. And I've had a lot of friends who have dealt with that. And I've seen some of them entertain it. And then I've seen some of them stand on it and not. You know what I mean? And it's like, for me, that's a hell no. It's a hell no. Because that in itself, it doesn't feel good to be reduced down to that. Especially by a white person.
Yeah.
It does not fucking feel good. You know what I mean? It doesn't.
It definitely feels worse from a white person. I have heard it from non-black, non-white people too.
I have too. For me, it's an automatic block for me. As soon as I block.
Yeah.
Didn't see that. You don't exist. Block.
Yeah. I mean, that's what you got to do. Because I don't know. Like, I'm not so, I don't need dick so bad that I'm trying to, like, reduce myself.
It's never
for the sake of having an orgasm. It's not worth it. I'll go home and jerk off. It don't matter.
You go home and handle your own shit. At the end of the day, you'll feel better about it, too.
Yep. Yep. It's crazy.
Cold shower, Chad.
Cold showers.
Yes.
So how did you and Yanni hook up? I don't know if we talked about that when the three of us did your podcast together.
I don't think we did. So Yanni found me through Instagram, through the Everyman Project. And then what was really interesting as well, he was creating a playlist. And he had a song that I had produced for another artist on his playlist. So he realized I was Tariq and Amir. We just kind of connected virtually for a while because I think we found each other around 2021. And then last year when he was in New York for a bit of a sabbatical away from L.A. for a bit. He had left L.A. for New York last year. Then he did go back. But while he was here, we really got to connect. We got to hang out. Got to go to some museums, see art, and just really connect over our love for pop culture, pop music, and really have this really dope synergy. We have a recording session tomorrow.
Oh, dope.
Yeah, we're going to do some more stuff. But we really got to connect, not just as musicians, but just as two queer Black men growing up in New York City. And it was so interesting. There were a lot of instances where we were in the same space and didn't even know each other. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of that. And we really realized how much we had in common. And we just came together and created a really fucking dope-ass body of work called Dream Big, which y'all could go out and stream right now.
Yes, sir, we should. Sure.
Yes.
And how did, like, the Bigger Than Our Dreams concept, like the podcast and everything, how did that come about?
Yanni came up with the concept for the podcast. And for me, potting was entirely new for him, but definitely entirely new for me. And I definitely had some of my own apprehensions at first going into it, just from a lot of the previous work I have done with Everyman. Like, I have people who steal my content and make hate videos on me.
Oh,
like,
that's not cool.
You can literally look up Tariq Carroll on YouTube and you could just see videos. Like, I've even had whole conservative platforms do a dissection on the fact that I'm trying to corrupt, man, just dumbass, wild
shit.
You know, and for me, I was like, okay, well, this is an opportunity for people to steal my content again. This is an opportunity for people to dissect my shit. And it came with a lot of anxiety. And then also to figuring out doing potting as a mirror. You know what I mean? Because, again, Tariq Carroll is the activist. Tariq Carroll does the Everyman Project. And figuring out my footing as a mirror, doing the podcast, it came with some anxiety, but we did get into a groove. And it was a lot of fun. It was definitely a lot of fun doing the podcast.
Yeah. Y'all talked about, and again, there is so little representation of bigger sized dudes, bigger sized queer dudes, bigger sized queer Black dudes, bigger sized confident queer Black dudes. Again, I'm a little older than you, so it was weird, right? Like, when I was coming out, mm-hmm. there was a section of queer life in New York City where you wasn't getting no play unless you were ripped, like you had muscles, right? And if you were even a little bit chunky, you were a bear. You were a bear or a cub, and you went to the bear and cub bars, and you only fucked with other bears and other cubs. And I feel like there's so much more acceptance now. And look, I haven't been inside a gay bar in New York City in 10 years, probably. It's been a minute.
You're not missing much.
I didn't think so.
You're not missing much. I'll tell you that.
But I would like to think that the focus isn't so much on having the typically, you know, the stereotypically ripped up body, the muscles and all that shit. And dad bods is a thing now, I guess.
It is, but also too, this is how layered fat phobia is. It's like, even within the bear community, even within the plus size queer communities, there's even discrimination within that, because there's certain body types and gender expressions are preferred in that, aka bearded, more masculine leaning men, that they're an acceptable level of fat. You know what I mean? So even within that space, there's still levels of discrimination. If you happen to be light-skinned, thick, and bearded, you are the hottest motherfucker out here. You know what I mean? But if you start to lean over 300 and you're not a muscle 300 and you start going, it's so many different layers in it. Or even if you are that weight and you're not super mask and you're super femme, you get treated a different way. So we've been programmed as queer people of color to hate ourselves so much that even in spaces that we create that are supposed to be safe for us, they're not that safe for us.
Right. Well, you think about what stereotypical queer male culture is right now. You know, all the language, everything came from queer men and straight women of color. Yeah. Absolutely. And people don't really recognize that.
Yeah.
So in Tariq/Amir's ideal world, what is the next step?
Who, personally or just in general?
It could be both or either.
Wow. Okay. I think my goals right now, there's a word that's really resonating with me right now. Because I'm very spiritual. I'm into tarot a little bit.
Okay.
the word temperance, and that's the word that's really sitting with me right now, is discipline, knowing how to manage your emotions in a healthier way, and really just finding and achieving balance, you know? So that is something I'm very intentionally pouring into in 2024, is to really achieve more balance overall in finding happiness, in finding joy and appreciation in the smaller things. Because again, just being Black, being queer, there is a pressure on us to be the best at everything. Because if we're not going to be seen.
Right.
And that's a unhealthy expectations that we put on ourselves, you know? And that's something I'm working on unpacking. And even in seeing all of the things that I've been able to accomplish in the past 6 years, from the Everyman Project going viral as it did, to shooting a 3-page spread in GQ France, showcasing 2+ size men of color, like, it's unheard of. I've broken a lot of barriers, and then still feeling like I haven't done enough. And I'm unpacking that, because I've done quite a fucking bit.
Right.
So now I'm in the space of really getting to what makes me happy and finding the balance, you know? So that is my goal for this year. But that definitely includes, again, I want to travel more. More time to myself to travel. Trying different cities, meeting new people, getting out of New York more as much as possible. I just got back from Atlanta. I had a great time out there.
Atlanta's great.
It was a great time. I'm looking forward to going back. And more collaboration. I want to collaborate more musically. And then getting back into the passion of photography, I'm not going to lie. You know, I've definitely been experiencing some burnout.
Sure.
But I think that's expected, because I've been doing this for 14 years. So now getting back into finding the passion for it again. So it's like, I guess this year is a year of balance and just awakening. Really, that's my goal right now. Yeah.
And how are you being intentional about that? How are you making sure that that is what your path is?
Getting the manifestation journals out.
Okay. All right.
We're getting more serious about writing our goals down. And then again, I'm very transparent. I'm still learning how to be softer to myself and more compassionate to myself. Because again, like I said, even as I was doing this project, I've had to unpack my own shit. And I really felt the downtime from COVID, you know, because we're coming back to Everyman Project this year. And this will be my first full campaign that I've shot since 2019. And we've done smaller things here and there. But I really realized how much I still needed to heal. Because again, being thrown into the press of it all and it being as big as it was, I really need a minute to sit and really heal from the rest of this shit. I healed from a good deal of it as I was doing it. But what I'm realizing with healing, it does require some time of stillness.
Mm.
And it does require some time of sitting with them emotions and getting to root of where they came from and sorting through it. So I think with the time off that I had from Everyman, I feel a bit more inspired to come back to it. And again, this year is really about finding balance and being as intentional about it as possible. And then being softer to myself as well, you know, giving myself grace, but also to pushing myself to get shit locked in and done. So it's, again, balance.
Right. Delicate balance.
It like, is.
You want to get stuff done, but you don't want to beat yourself up if situations happen and the thing doesn't get done.
That part.
I'm still trying to figure that shit out too. So I don't know. If you have any tips.
I'm struggling. I'm trying my best. I have had my wins and I've had my losses. But what I really think has been the most helpful, again, is my meditation, my spirituality. Like, definitely this week, you know, spent a bit of a week. So definitely getting up and just really doing a gratitude meditation in the morning. Just really thinking about all of the things that I am immensely grateful for. That's really a great space to start, and just really starting off my mornings a lot more intentional. It's been a great help. I had a little anxiety the past few nights, but I turned my phone off and put it in my drawer and set a separate alarm.
Good for you.
And for me, I have to set that boundary, because as I'm getting older, I don't know if this is a good or bad thing, but I'm realizing how much I like sitting by myself in silence sometimes.
There's nothing wrong with that.
It just feels so good to not hear anybody or anybody else's shit.
We just are around noise so much.
All day. And for me, I'm a big giver. You know what I mean? It's like I'm the friend that a lot of people call to kind of vent to. And then for me, just in learning life and navigating friendships over the past few years, it is important to set healthy boundaries. So, yeah. You know, cutting my phone off, putting that shit in the drawer, closing my laptop down, setting a separate alarm. And my new rule now is that I'm not going to touch my phone until I have drunk at least half a liter of water.
Okay.
And I've at least done one meditation. I will not turn my phone on. And that is my new rule, because I deserve that. I deserve that every fucking morning. This world is fucked up and chaotic. So we need to be able to ground ourselves. That's just the reality of it, you know? And it's
I'm writing this shit down.
Yes. Like I don't even know if I have my... I have like a mason jar and I fill that whole shit up with water and I chug that shit down. I take my medication. I meditate. I do a gratitude meditation in the morning. I do not touch my phone until I do it.
I love that.
It's definitely changed my mornings, because you know how it is. You wake up, first thing you grab your phone, you in emails, you looking at your bank account, you looking at bills, and that shit enough.
Yep.
Puts you in a space.
Yep.
And again, that shit's not going to go away. It's still there. But Right. Why start off your morning like that? You know what I mean? And my cousin, who is a therapist and a life coach, and I'm grateful that she's doing really, her name is Ayana Johnson. Check her out. She's doing really dope content. And she had posted a video about having anxiety and ruminating. And she's a therapist herself, so to hear her own struggles. But also she said something that really resonated with me and how to really rewire your thinking. And she was like, as people deal with anxiety, we overthink every second of the day. Now, what if we take that, instead of ruminating on the negative outcome, let's try to flip it and ruminate on the best possible outcome. Mm-hmm. I mean, let's shift the energy of the rumination. And that is something that really sat with me last night when I saw that. And I was like, you know what? Let's start off these mornings better. No matter where, how the fucking day ends up, at least I could say I did my best to start off my morning with ease and joy. And that's
always so important.
Yeah.
That is so important.
It is. I think a morning routine is just important as a nightly routine. You know what I mean? I know Yanni, he meditates in the morning as well. I think he does his morning pages. You know, for me, it is gratitude meditation. It is hydrating myself. I have a few money manifestation tapes I might put on. So it's like, I got to have some sort of ritual. When it was warmer, I would go out, I would do that and then take my walk.
Okay.
So now we ain't walking as much as it's freezing.
No, it's cold outside.
We get up, phone is off. The phone off at night, that is key. That is key. So it's been a life changer.
I was good at it for a while and then I stopped. And I usually keep my phone in another room overnight. But I have a laptop in my room. So yeah. Even if I want to check what time it is, I'll lean over and hit the space bar on the laptop and be like, oh, it's 6 o'clock.
Yeah.
I would like to not look at anything.
Me too.
Yeah. And so, even if I put my phone in another room, sometimes I leave it on. So like I have somebody that texts me early in the morning, I'm going to hear it and wake up, and then you jump right back into the phone routine. So I'm going to take your advice.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I promise you, doing it the last two nights, it's done wonders.
All right. All right, my man.
Yes. Yes.
All right. Well, I don't know if you had anything else you wanted to talk about.
I think I'll let the people know.
Yes.
I'm putting out some new music.
Okay.
I'm dropping a project. It is called Three of Swords. And again, I'm very into tarot. So Three of Swords is a card that represents anxiety, intrusive thoughts, being trapped in your mind, grief, loss, but also to, again, being trapped in your mind and not necessarily seeing the silver lining in a situation. You know what I mean? So the project itself, it's a bit of R&B, electronic, it's a little dance, it's a little punk pop. It's really a hybrid of different textures that really kind of document processing, like, grieving a relationship, what that feels like, you know? So, you know me, I'm going to throw some fun in there. You know, we're going to cry, but we're going to shake
some ass. You can't cry for 45 minutes straight.
We're going to shake some ass, but this is some of my most honest work, sonically. And yes, I do have a little anxiety about people hearing it, because this is the most sharing I've done, sonically. And I think when you share, and you share from a space that is authentic, it is scary. But I do feel that people hearing this music, they're going to have something that they can really relate to. You know, so.
And you come from a place of transparency in everything else you do. So
yes,
I empathize with your anxiety, but you're going to be all right.
I think so. I feel good about it. I think in writing this project, it's been very healing. You know what I mean? And really getting the shit out. So it's been a great time. I've been working on it with one of my best friends. His name is Cold Press Poppy. Really amazing producer based out of Virginia. And he really pulled me together during a time that was really rough. Good to have people. Amazing support system. And then to have someone like that who is also a producer. You know what I mean? And to be able to vent about what I'm dealing with, vent about what's going on, to take those stories and put them into songs was really a healing experience for me. So I'm really excited for y'all to hear this body work.
I love it. I'm looking forward to hearing it. So first of all, I want to thank Tariq for being so forthcoming on the podcast and speaking so honestly. It is the hope that all my guests do that. Tariq definitely came through on that. If you want to know more about Tariq, there are plenty of places you can follow him. You can follow the Everyman Project on YouTube. Also, congratulations. I saw some of his photography work online on GQ. So shout out to you for that. You are on Instagram. You can follow him at either Tariq Carroll, that is TarikCarroll, or you can follow him at amir.stay.fly, amir.stay.fly. Both on Instagram, both really good follows. Thanks again, Tariq, for taking the time to be on this podcast, and hope to have you back soon. Thank you for listening to Detoxicity. I hope you found this particular episode interesting. And if you are new, I hope you go back and listen to all of the older episodes. Once again, my name is Mike Joseph. I am the host and producer of this show. And there are a lot of things that you can do to continue to support our mission, continue to support this podcast. Follow me on social media. I am on Instagram, Twitter, and I'm on TikTok as Detox Pod Guy. You can also send me an email if you'd like. I'm at detoxpod@gmail.com. I am always on the hunt for people with interesting, inspirational, and powerful stories. So if you know somebody who fits that bill, or if you yourself fit that bill, please don't hesitate to drop me a line via email or via social media. Please make sure you subscribe on your podcast platform that you're listening to this on. Rate, comment, help a brother out, help us move up in the rankings. Follow me on social media. Like I said, follow our Patreon, or subscribe to my Patreon, actually, patreon.com/detoxicitypod. You get access to exclusive episodes. You get episodes a little earlier than the general public. You get a cool ass sticker, lots of stuff. Once again, patreon.com/detoxicitypod. Quick shout out to Calvin Williams for providing the music and, doing his magic on the logo, which was originally designed by Jacob Block. I thank you all for listening. I wish you all the best. Please take care of each other. Till next time, peace.